It is WrestleMania month here on the Best of PW Torch livecast. I'm Wade Keller, and welcome to the Friday, March 2nd edition of the Best of PW Torch livecast. We appreciate you making PW Torch livecast part of your podcast listening during the week. Don't forget to also check out the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcasts. There are four episodes each week, and today features a new interview with ex-WWE creative team member Christian Harlock, who worked for WWE behind the scenes alongside Paul Heyman, Michael Hayes, Bruce Pritchard, Brian Gewirtz, Stephanie McMahon, and Vince McMahon back in 2001, a time of transition for the way that WWE handled their creative department with Stephanie in charge. Fascinating interview with Christian. Check that out right now by searching Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use to listen to your podcasts. And today we go back on the PW Torch livecast Best of Edition to the post-WrestleMania 26 call-in show on March 28th, 2010. We're going back 8 years to the call-in show. It feels like a different era of podcasting, a different era for WWE, and I think you'll enjoy James Caldwell and Greg Parks talking with callers about WrestleMania 26 minutes after the event concluded.
Welcome to the PW Torch livecast special edition. This is Torch assistant editor James Caldwell, and I am joined by Torch columnist Greg Parks. Greg, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing well, James. Really refreshed and energized, ready to talk about WrestleMania.
Yeah, it's been a very interesting night, to say the least. I mean, we have about 10 people already on the line, so we've got a lot of interested people wanting to talk WrestleMania. Greg, what just jumps right in? I mean, obviously to me, it's the Shawn Michaels appearance, retirement. I mean, we assume retirements do not stick in wrestling, but based on what Michael said, based on the finish of this match, it had a sense of finality to it. What's your impression of the way this pay-per-view concluded?
Well, it certainly looks like that they are going to play the Michaels stipulation, retirement stipulation up for at least the short term. You know, they wouldn't have finished the show off that way with Michaels giving a tearful goodbye and everything if they didn't expect to honor that for at least a little while. And, you know, there's rumors of him taking at least the summer off. So probably the earliest we'll see him is sometime in the fall if we don't see him in the next few Raws anyways. It's going to be interesting to see where they go with that. Certainly, I don't think he's done forever. He's obviously, based on tonight's match with The Undertaker, he's still got a lot left in the tank, a lot left to give. I know he's a little worn down, a little injured right now, so taking some time off will probably be the best for him. But when he comes back, how he comes back, I think that remains to be seen.
It very much felt like Brett Favre, seemingly the last couple of seasons where he's had that last game and he's thrown the interception or he just hasn't been able to get his team to that final victory. He hasn't been able to get that final, you know, he hasn't been able to get over the hump. He hasn't been able to get over the Undertaker, if you will. And, you know, he kind of, at the end of it, he's like, yeah, I'm done. And then some time goes by, and then he's back, and you get the sense that, I mean, like we saw Brett Favre in the playoffs, he still had it. And with Shawn Michaels in this match with The Undertaker, he still has it. He's still performing at the peak of his ability. And he's still a great performer. He's still a great wrestler. This was an amazing match with Undertaker. And I get the sense, like you said, I mean, there's so many more programs out there. There's a Shawn Michaels Triple H program out there. There's Shawn Michaels with pretty much anybody else in the roster because everybody wants to work with Michaels and have an epic feud. So there's so much more potential for Michaels in WWE, but he did make it sound like he's done. And maybe that's just a product of him being banged up and injured and, you know, I just don't want to be on the road anymore. I want to go home. But like he said, he was kind of walking away at the end. He said, I'm going to drive my kids crazy in 3 weeks, you know. So it's going to be one of those things where he's going to, 6 months from now, maybe he'll be ready to go back on the road again. What do you make of the moment and the match? I mean, how do you compare this match to last year? Did you think it lived up to expectations? What's your overall review of the match with The Undertaker?
I'd say it lived up to most people's expectations. I think few out there while they thought it was going to be a really good match, I don't know that there was a lot of people out there that thought it could equal or surpass last year's match. The one negative I had coming out of this match was the amount of finishers that were kicked out of in this match.
Yeah.
I know it makes for great drama, and the crowd was certainly into it in Arizona. But for me, it takes a little of the realism out of it that they're kicking out of all these finishers, and it kind of makes the finishers worth a little less. Although Taker did hit the jumping tombstone, so it wasn't
yeah.
any regular tombstone that did it after after Michaels had kicked out of one or more tombstones during the match. But I thought it was absolutely a 4-star match, 4-star plus probably. But it didn't live up to last year's, but it didn't take full advantage, I didn't think, of the no DQ, no count out rules. They
yeah.
had a couple spots outside the ring. They had the tombstone outside the ring. They had the moonsault outside the ring. But, you know, if fans were expecting something more given those rules, and even in the Bret Hart Vince McMahon match, I mean, the worst we saw in there was the crowbar or whatever that was. So the no DQ matches that people grew up on are not the kind of no DQ matches you're going to be seeing in WWE, and I think tonight was a perfect example of that.
Yeah, it was. they didn't really take advantage of that opportunity, which I thought was fine. I don't think they really needed it. It was just sort of a way to not have to worry about count outs or anything that sort of thing, and just kind of be able to do some spots like Michaels with a moonsault, and not have to be worried, you know, not having the audience distracted by whether there's going to be a count out or some sort of screwy finish. Like you said, it was a match where regarding the finisher point, it seemed like the match before, John Cena and Batista kind of used that gimmick, if you will, before the main event, because Cena and Batista, they each kicked out of each other's big finishers. And then, you know, Shawn Michaels and Undertaker turn around and kind of do the same thing. But I thought there was a reason for that. There was not an excuse, but there was a reason, which is that neither guy wanted to lose. I mean, both guys were throwing the kitchen sink at the other guy. They were doing every single thing possible they knew to finish the match. And like you said, it took a super tombstone, a jumping, leaping super tombstone after Michaels just slapped the crap out of Undertaker to win the match. So I didn't have a problem with the kickouts as much as I would have if the finish wasn't a super tombstone. You know what I mean? Because in the middle of the match, I'm sort of thinking like, oh, Cena and Batista just did the same thing with everybody kicking out the finishers. So it could have taken away from it, and I definitely thought about that at the end of the match, but I was okay with it just because I thought the performances were so good. So regarding Bret Hart Vince McMahon, and that's going to be another match that everybody's going to be talking about, is that match because, I mean, no one really had high expectations for a 5-star match from Bret Hart and Vince McMahon, who they may have been one of the clumsiest performers in the history of the wrestling business. What was your take on that match? I mean, I didn't like it at all. I thought it was, I don't know what they were trying to do with that. It was just 11 minutes of dragged out beating up on McMahon with the Hart Dynasty and the Hart family slapping the apron. It was not good in my estimation. But what was your take on that? Are you a little bit higher on it than I am, or are you about the same as I am?
I'm sure there are people out there who thought that's exactly what the match should have been, was 10 minutes of Bret Hart just absolutely destroying Vince McMahon, you know, with the Hart family cheering on. And there are probably people that were okay with that. The way it played out, it didn't exactly work for me. And I think a lot of that was the crowd was not really into it for whatever reason. And one of the other reasons might have been because it dragged so awfully. And the whole Hart family thing, I think that might have looked good on paper, but it didn't. The execution just wasn't there.
Yeah.
Like you said, Vince McMahon, when you're on a card full of wrestlers who are trained to take bumps and things like that, and when Vince McMahon's falling to his knees every time he's punched and doing all that kind of stuff and the terrible selling job that he does, it kind of takes you out of the moment when the rest of the card is full of guys who, you know, you can see that are trained to do it well, and Vince is just flopping around like a fish out of water out there.
Yeah.
It kind of takes you out of the moment and takes out a little out of the enjoyment of the match. There was very little creativity, I thought, in it. It was just Vince pounding on Bret Bret pounding on Vince for, like you said, 10 minutes. And, you know, they kind of did the pre-match stuff, and I thought there would be a little more, stuff that would happen during the match to kind of, you know, instead of Brett sitting in a chair to, you know, to give himself a break, which I understand that Brett was, you know, so in control of the match that he could take a break, and that was a time when fans could pop because, you know, they knew that Brett was in control, and that's what they wanted. They wanted to see Brett kick the crap out of Vince McMahon. So I think in that regard, WWE thought they were giving the viewers what they wanted, but it just came across as one slow beating, and it just wasn't fun to watch overall.
Yeah, it was. I think what really hurt the crowd reaction was that pre-match angle. That was unnecessary. I mean, it was. I just thought it wasn't really well explained, and it was sort of this. You know, do we really have to go this route again? We just want to see the match, and it was.
Well, I understand that they're playing off the Hart family history of them not always getting along. You know, but Brett, I didn't think Brett was very strong on the mic in announcing that, you know, it was, he had gotten to his family too, and they were on his side. And I didn't think that reveal came across as well as it could have, and I don't know whose fault that was, you know, Brett's performance or the writing or whatever. But that was kind of awkwardly, clunkily done. And then that was it. I mean, I think there was a lot of expectations of, a lot more smoke and mirrors, a lot more things going on than what ended up taking place.
Yeah, and I thought they could have worked that angle into the match itself rather than giving this whole explanation ahead of time and then having a match where it's just Hart beating on McMahon with the family involved. The setup, it was just too much to explain to an audience that was sitting there just, if they were going to have run-ins, the audience was accepting that there were going to be run-ins during the match itself. And then when they kind of told you the story ahead of time, it was like, okay, that's, all right, cool. You know, it just kind of took the crowd out of the action, and there wasn't, the crowd wasn't popping for stuff they probably would have been popping for in covering for the lack of athleticism in the match. So that's going to be something we're going to have to find out is who put that together and why it was put together that way. Like you said, Greg, I'm sure it looked good on paper, but execution-wise, it is very much lacking. So we have several people on hold and wanting to get on the show, but if you want to join the show, we're going to be on for an hour. We've got about 45 minutes left. The number to call is 646-721-9828. Let's go to our first call tonight, talking WrestleMania. This is from the 480 area code. 480, welcome to the show. State your name and where you're from.
James, it's Efren.
Efren, how's WrestleMania live?
It was good. It was fine. But Hart McMahon.
It was fine. In your voice. It was fine. Yeah.
Okay. So Money in the Bank was good, but Wade said in his review that from a director's standpoint, you were focused on the action. Well, from a live standpoint, we see 4 to 6 guys just lying on the ground outside. So it was fine on TV. It didn't work that great. And then, you know, the booze started to get a little bit louder as Swagger couldn't get the booth down.
Yeah.
So that kind of killed it. When McMahon came out and said, you know, I've had your family turn on you, that was great. Okay, nice little turn. But you didn't have to tell us that it was going the other way. You know, you didn't have, and it killed the stadium. So it just, you know, took a few more. It was fine for the first four rows. You know, you want me to give them another crowbar? Okay. Everyone else was sitting on their hands, and it took that long for Cena Batista to get the crowd back into it.
Well, what was sort of the impression of the audience that, you know, Shawn Michaels walks away, the show's over? What was kind of the buzz in the stadium as the pay-per-view ended with apparently Michaels' career over, at least for now?
It was a wow. Because you really didn't know which way it was going to go. It seemed like, okay, it was a wow factor. Like, is this the last time we're going to see him?
Yeah.
The match was very well done. Greg, I disagree with you with the finishes, and I thought it surpassed last year's, or it surpassed expectations in the point where I didn't think it was going to be good as last year, and it was. It was different, and there were only so many other things you could do, and I thought of kicking out of the finishers is what you had left in that match.
Yeah, Greg, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, see, I don't think so. I think they could have explored the no DQ a little more. I think the psychology this year was better than last year's match, which was pretty much a straight wrestling match. But, you know, I was expecting as good a match as last year's, but different because of the no count out, no DQ stipulations. I just don't think they explored it that well. And like James said, coming off a match where finishers were already kicked out of, it just kind of makes it a little unrealistic because so many other times the finisher is the end and no one kicks out of it. And then all of a sudden in one match they're kicking out of 10 or 20 finishers, it seems like. So, well, and the other thing is, and you didn't hear this live, but Michael Cole was just absolutely terrible in that last match. Calling, you know, he was, you know, this has got to be it. Shawn Michaels has won, or the other way around. Undertaker with a tombstone, it is over. Shawn Michaels' career, no, he kicks out. And it was like, Cole, you stupid idiot, I would buy these beer falls a little better if you weren't giving it away beforehand. So, I mean, so for you live, that didn't affect you, obviously, but, you know, that was something watching at home that really kind of took me out of the moment a little bit.
Yeah, James, what did you get that? I'm going to jump on this point real quick, which is, it's kind of one of the things where it was the opposite effect of last year where watching back Jim Ross's call on the replay pushed my star rating to a 5-star where I was live and it was 4.75. Here, if you're in the building for Michael's take, you're probably thinking it's around 5 stars. You hear Michael Cole and it's like 4.25 because you're just trying to ignore him the whole time. So it's like the reverse effect of, you know, I mean, the show that Jim Ross is missing, first of all, but it was the opposite effect of actually lowering a match's believability because Michael Cole kept selling the near falls and giving them away. And Jerry Lawler, too. It was just one of those frustrating WWE announcing elements. But, Everett, go ahead and what was your point you're going to follow up with?
Well, that was my question. Does Jim Ross make that another 5-star match?
I think so. I mean, just selling that drama. I mean, Jim Ross sells drama. Michael Cole was serviceable at times on pay-per-view, and, you know, he was more passionate than robotic on Raw. But Jim Ross would have put that at 5 stars, just the way he would have sold that action, combined with the crowd reactions, combined with the in-ring performance. That's 5 stars with Ross Collin, no doubt about it, no doubt. So, awesome.
It was a pleasure to talk to you today, James. Thank you.
We appreciate it.
You guys run an absolutely wonderful site, and thank you for everything today. Thank you.
We appreciate it, but we appreciate the live live correspondence, so definitely thumbs up on that.
All right, buddy.
We appreciate it, Ethel. We'll talk to you later.
You take care.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I'm Wade Keller, and I urge you to be sure that you're also subscribing to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. All you have to do is search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use on your Apple or Android device to subscribe to both feeds. There's a red brand covering Raw and SmackDown every Monday night and Tuesday night, and it's downloadable a couple hours after the show. And then there's also the Wade Keller Podcast Flagship Edition on Thursdays with a rotation of co-hosts, including Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and others. And then there's our Interview Friday Edition. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harloff talking about his days working for WWE and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as their perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
And pro wrestlers, including NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, talking about the challenges facing Ronda Rousey as she transitions from MMA to WWE.
Think about, like, the press conferences and stuff like that. They just, someone tells them, like, all right, now it's your turn, go out there, right? I'm sure if you ask Ronda, she'd probably say this moment is the result of hundreds of people's work, meticulous preparation and planning and timing and everything, and now suddenly it's like, go, and that can be very overwhelming.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
All right, Greg, let's keep rolling through the calls. We've got about 5 or 6 people on hold, so let's go to the 407 area code. I'm almost familiar with this one, but state your name and where you're from.
Hey, guys, Jimmy Kissimmee, Florida. How's it going?
I knew, Jimmy. I'm going to get your area code down.
Well, I'll try to be pretty brief here, guys, because I know we'll be talking about this Monday, you know, tomorrow too, and all that stuff. But, you know, my first thoughts too, I just wanted to throw out there, and again, I threw it in the chat room, people may tell me, I may be in the minority here, but I think Baker Michaels was better than last year. I enjoyed it a lot more. I thought the spots outside were fantastic. The energy, especially throughout the whole thing, especially the second half. The ending, you know, with Michaels actually retiring, I didn't think he would. A lot of this stuff was a smokescreen. Just that ending itself was a real feel-good moment for me, and I just thought to myself, you know, that's why I'm a wrestling fan, is to see stuff like that, classy acts, talking to the fans on the way out, Undertaker helping him up, just phenomenal. I think that was great. Real quick on the Bret Hart thing, and then I'll go ahead and leave it at that. Because I'm sure I could go on forever about the whole show, but it seems to me that because I definitely think it was drawn out and everything like that. I love the image of him putting the Sharp Shirt on Vince, and like how people were saying that's what they paid for, obviously. But I enjoyed seeing a family out there, but I agree that it didn't really have to go down that way. And I'm kind of thinking to myself, it seems like the crowd too was dead, because it seems like this was all kind of like something that, you know, Vince kind of did for the Hart family. And he kind of just put himself out there and said, hey, kick the crap out of me. Give me 15 chairs to the back, and you guys can all forget about everything in Montreal, forget about all this other crap that you dealt with, and you can get off my back. That's the thing. And it seems like the crowd, especially there's kids in the crowd that don't know what the backstory is, they're kind of like, okay, let's move on. So, you know, some of the matches I just thought were a bit short as well. I really enjoyed still Punk and Mysterio, and even Legacy I thought was good to an extent. But I'll go ahead and close on this, that I really enjoyed Sheamus and Triple H as an undercard match. I thought they actually did a solid job. Even though I kind of think Sheamus should have gotten the win personally, I'm not shocked. I think I gave them too much credit thinking that Hunter wouldn't get a win at WrestleMania. So
we appreciate the comments. Greg, what are your thoughts on those two undercard matches, which was Ray and Punk, with Ray getting the win in about a 6.5-minute match, and then Sheamus and Hunter? I thought they had a really good undercard match, just a straight-up singles match, good, solid wrestling, good story. What were your impressions of those two matches that a lot of people are going to be talking about?
Sheamus versus Triple H was good. It was about what you'd expect, nothing more, nothing less. So that pretty much met my expectations. Ray Punk was criminally short. That was the one that I was really looking forward to, one of the matches that I was really amped for, and I was really disappointed in the length. For the 6.5 minutes they went, they were great. There were a couple matches that I thought were cut way short. The tag match was another one. But then again, you know, they went off the air at about, you know, 10:55 Eastern. So yeah, there wasn't a whole lot they could cut out. They only ran one backstage skit. You know, a lot of it was devoted to video packages. And, you know, we can sit here and argue all day about the video packages, but for a casual viewer, they are probably pretty helpful in catching them up on the feuds. You know, the fans on the internet, the hardcore fans and whatnot, they'll, you know, argue to the blue in the face about having to sit through them. But I understand where WWE is coming from and having them. But, you know, aside from the Divas match, I don't know what they really could have cut out to add to those two matches. But overall, you know, those two were serviceable for what they were. But, yeah, I was disappointed in Punk Ray and the length of it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any problems really with what was on the pay-per-view. Because, like you said, they didn't add. I mean, they had, like, what, one backstage skit with, you know, Slim Jim with Santino, and then they had an interview. And that was pretty much the
whole thing.
Yeah,
that was it.
Yeah. Santino, Vicky, yeah. I was fine with that. I mean, they limited the wacky skits they sometimes have with Mean Gene. They just got them in one skit. The Divas match didn't really need to be there. They could have cut that out. But, I mean, is that a top five complaint? Probably not. So, I mean, I was fine with the pacing. But like you said, Punk Ray, that 6 minutes, I didn't understand that part. Tag title match, I was fine with that going 3.5. I thought they packed in it. It was one of the fastest 3.5-minute matches. I mean, it seemed like it went about 6 minutes, but I stopped my clock and it was 3.5. And I thought they packed in a good amount of spots into that match to open up the show. I thought it was well paced, but I mean, they could have cut about 3 minutes off of Bret and Vince. That would have been one way to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Let's go to the 931 area code. 931, welcome to the show. State your name and where you're from.
Hey, guys. This is Ian from Tennessee.
Hey, Ian. What's going on?
Well, I really.
Are you a Vols fan, by the way? First of all, are you a Tennessee Vols
fan? No, I'm closer to Nashville.
Okay. Go ahead.
I really hate to come off and sound like a jaded fan because I'm really not. But I've watched wrestling since 1990. And I'm going to my first WrestleMania next year. Uh-huh. I really liked this year's WrestleMania, but it didn't exactly make me excited to go to next year's. I know there's not a whole lot they could have done about the pacing of the matches, but it was just, it was disappointing, you know. And
specifically was disappointing, like just instead of
the length, the length of some of the matches. And, you know, I know they have to do the video packages, but if it's going to cause multiple matches to go under 10 minutes, it shouldn't have been. Seems like they could have maybe tried to work around maybe a different group of matches instead of trying to cram everybody in on the show.
Yeah, I mean, the video packages, Greg, I mean, it's one of those things where, like you said, they're trying to get everyone caught up to speed and sort of have a breather for the live audience and have a breather for the home audience as well. Is there anything else they could have done with the pacing, like Ian was talking about?
Well, first of all, Ian, don't worry about sounding like a jaded fan. I've heard way more jaded fans than you, you know, complimenting WrestleMania and everything like that, so do not worry about that. As for the pacing, you know, you mentioned something, James, and talked about the video packages that I hadn't thought of before, and that is it not only gives a refresher for the casual fans who might be watching, but it also gives a break for the live fans. You can't pack match after match after match. You can't do 3 straight hours of wrestling. The crowd will die out, or 4 straight hours, really. The crowd will die out by the middle of the second hour. I mean, you just can't do it. They need that breather. They need that Divas match in there to kind of, you know, get all the emotions from the last match out and just kind of sit there and, you know, let their mind refresh and get ready for the next match. So I think there are valid complaints about the pacing. I think they could have, you know, cut off 2 matches from this year's WrestleMania. Don't ask me to pick which two. Probably the Divas match. And I'm looking through my notes now, and I don't really know what else you would cut out. I mean, they're all big matches, and that was the compliment of this year's WrestleMania. People were saying, this is a loaded card. This looks like a great pay-per-view, a great WrestleMania, top three maybe even, as far as pre-show, looking at the card. Well, the downside of that is you're going to have a lot of matches cut short because they need, some of these matches need more time to tell a story, obviously. So you're obviously going to be disappointed when some of the possibly great matches like Punk and Ray only get 6.5 minutes, you know, probably. It didn't feel like a feud ender there. I'm expecting something at Extreme Rules, even though Punk didn't win. But, you know, that's the downside of having such a loaded card is you get some really good matches that are cut short.
Yeah. Well, I'll let you guys get to other callers, but one last question I wanted to ask, and I'll get off here. Do you think that the Money in the Bank match suffered because they kind of had to be extra careful? And I appreciate you guys taking my call. Thanks.
Yeah, we appreciate it, Ian. Thanks for calling. I don't know if it suffered. I thought they had some good spots in it. I thought they, for the live audience, like Efron said, it wasn't exactly good watching guys sit on the floor, but I thought they mixed in enough stars at one time and sort of had these different combinations of stars and moves and spots that, you know, I didn't think the lack of super huge dangerous bumps took away from what was a well-paced match. What was your evaluation of the match, Greg?
No, the lack of danger, the safety in that match did not take away from the match. What took away from the match was the 10 men involved.
Yeah.
That's just too many. I mean, when the match started and the bell rang and they did the wide shot of the ring, I'm like, is this a battle royal? Yeah, it looks like a battle royal. I'm thinking that's not what this match should be. The one thing, and you're going to get the innovative spots, the Kofi Kingston there, using the ladders as stilts, the spot where they had the kind of scaffold, which I've been begging for in these kind of matches since I saw. It's on the ladder match DVD from WCW. I think it was like 3 Count in the Young Dragons, maybe.
Yeah.
I could be wrong on that, but it was at one of the pay-per-views where they used the ladders as a scaffold in the ring and kind of, it was a ladder match, but they had set them up that way and, you know, fought around those, and there was a lot of unique spots on that. And I've been waiting for them to do that in WWE. Finally, they kind of did it today. But I understand that that's also a dangerous thing that they might want to shy away from. So I don't think that took away from the match, like I said, as much as having 10 men and really being able to only focus on two at a time in the ring.
Yeah, and it was. What about Jack Swagger winning? You know, we're gonna rapid fire through a lot of different calls coming up. So, Greg, what was your? I mean, just a 20-second thought on Jack Swagger winning and being that final guy to hold the briefcase.
The two that I thought had real serious chances, of course, were Christian and Drew McIntyre. I would have probably had Jack Swagger in my top four or five to win,
yeah,
but not a serious contender. So, but it was a surprise. It made sense. I think he's earned it at this point. He's kind of been shoved down the card a bit lately, and I think he's WWE seems to think he's ready for some kind of push here. Even if he loses, it'll reflect well on him, I think, to win that match.
Yep. This is the PW Torch Livecast. I'm PW Torch assistant editor James Caldwell, hosting a special post-WrestleMania 26 edition of the Livecast with Torch columnist Greg Parcher coming up on midnight Eastern, 11 o'clock Torch time. And we're going to roll through. We got about eight people on hold, so we're going to roll through. We're going to try to get through everybody in half an hour. So it's going to be rapid-fire style, and we're going to be sharp, and we're going to answer your questions. And let's go to the 651 area code. Welcome to the show. State your name and where you're from.
This is Tom from St. Paul.
Hey, Tom, what's going on?
Not much. Just a couple of things. First, on the Undertaker-Shawn match, yeah, I thought overall it was a great match, but I think there's a couple of spots in there where, especially, for instance, when Shawn did the moonsault, they showed that replay like four or five times right after that. But if you watch the replay, he missed. It looked, at least to me, it looked like he actually missed what he was trying to do. And I think that takes away from some of it is where I hate it when the WWE shows a replay of things when it gets botched. I don't know if you guys saw that. And the other thing is with that Money in the Bank match with Swagger winning, is this basically the WWE throwing it in saying, we don't much care about this Money in the Bank. We're going to wait till we have the pay-per-view, and this is going to be our token loser of the briefcase match?
Yeah, it was the spot with Michaels and Taker. It did look like he missed. He came up a little bit short. But it was actually funny because it worked out because he had been working that knee and that leg the whole time. So he lands on Undertaker's leg and knee, and announcers are like, oh, well, he meant to do that. He's been working the knee the whole time. So that worked out, like you said. It did look awkward on the replay. Greg, what's your take on them having Swagger win on that aspect of, does it come across where they're just throwing out a victory and they don't really care about who actually won the match?
That's not really the sense that I got. They could be read into it, I guess, that way. But the ultimate, thing is we don't know how the Money in the Bank pay-per-view is going to work. You know, we don't know if they're cashing in at the Money in the Bank. We don't know if there's going to be a Money in the Bank match, just one or two or how many at this pay-per-view or when they're going to plan on cashing them in. So we don't know a lot of details about that match, so I really can't make judgments about, what WWE is doing with this Money in the Bank match. I hope this signals a bit of a push for Swagger. And then, like I said, even if he loses whomever he challenges against, he'll always be that Money in the Bank winner. And, at least for a few months, unless he cashes it in right away, he'll be in the spotlight because they'll be wanting to get the Money in the Bank winner on TV. And they certainly won't have him losing as much because he is the Money in the Bank winner.
Well, we assume. Yeah. I mean, Jack Swagger's been such a start-stop character so long that, then he'll go out on TV and drop on Raw tomorrow. Who knows? But, Tom, we appreciate the call. We're going to keep rolling through calls. Let's go to the 814 area code. 814, welcome to the show. State your name and where you're from.
Hey, guys, it's Rich. I'm driving home from the stadium in Phoenix.
All right. How was the experience?
Yeah, it was pretty good. I have two quick complaints about the show, and maybe you guys can help me see the light on this. One, Triple H, it just seems like when you think he's giving an inch, he takes about 3 feet back. I mean, why the hell can't he put somebody over? I don't know how that helps Sheamus more by losing than letting him have a clean win, and you can build to something bigger. I just don't get the logic. And two, why is the WWE so worried about signing Jim Ross that they don't plan on using him on television and apparently not for talent relations? That makes no sense. I didn't see it on TV, so you guys could tell me, but could that show have been a lot better with Jim Ross? Do you think it wouldn't have made much of a difference? And What do you think Jim Ross's future at WWE is? Apparently it won't be on TV. Thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate it, Rich. We appreciate the insight. Ross would definitely help the pay-per-view. I mean, just there's no doubt about it. It's WrestleMania. You want your best announcer available, and that's Jim Ross. As far as his future, that remains to be seen. I mean, he signed a short-term contract extension. We don't know what the future is going to be for Ross. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's going to be on TV. If this was the time to reintroduce him, this would have been the event. Greg, what was your take on the Sheamus-Hunter booking with Hunter going over, and was that the right booking decision?
I don't have a big problem with it. You know, I guess it all depends on where they go from here. If Sheamus has been pushed to the top. I mean, he's already been WWE champion, and he's gotten pushed harder and faster than almost anyone in recent memory, I think. So for him to have a loss here against Triple H, I don't think it's that big of a deal because of, you know, how quickly he's been pushed and things like that. And I think he'll probably recover quite quickly from this if the feud is over, which I'm not sure it is. And that's the thing with WrestleMania now. I mean, there's so many matches and feuds that you can look at from this year's pay-per-view, like CM Punk and Rey Mysterio, like Triple H and Sheamus, where you can look at it and say, this doesn't feel like the end of the feud, even though WrestleMania has been notoriously that moment where, you know, all the greatest feuds of the year come to end. Finally, you know, it brings finality to things, but we don't get that now because of, you know, the pay-per-views every month and cashing in on WrestleMania rematches this year at Extreme Rules and whatnot. So, you know, I don't have a big problem with that, like I said, because of the way Sheamus has been portrayed. I think he's been portrayed as strong enough to overcome this loss to Triple H.
I think this entire match for Sheamus was about making him seem like a main event guy. I think that was the entire purpose of this. It wasn't so much about Sheamus getting a victory and continuing to chase. It was, as Michael Cole said after the match, oh, Sheamus belongs in the main event. He hung with the game. He, you know, tested him. He put him to the limit. I thought that was the right way to play this hand because Sheamus has been, you know, shot to the top that, you know, a lot of fans didn't really see him as a credible guy to be in that main event slot. This is a way to legitimize him having a close match, you know, being presented as, you know, sort of being in that fourth quarter, you know, down by one or two, and just Triple H hits a three-pointer to win it, you know, and just kind of put it away at the end. That's kind of the vibe I got, and Sheamus hung around, and he looked legit. And they can play off that going forward. You know, they can have a rematch at Extreme Rules where Sheamus, you know, says, all right, was this close, I had you beat, and we'll, you know, we'll do it in the cage, we'll do it in no DQ, we'll do last man standing, whatever. And they can go forward with that. But I think this was about legitimizing him as a main eventer. So mission accomplished in that respect.
Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it, too, every day at pwtorch.com. Join me Monday nights for my live coverage of Raw, Tuesday nights for my live coverage of SmackDown, Sunday nights for my live coverage of WWE pay-per-views, and keep up on the news and read exclusive editorials and special features every day at pwtorch.com.
Let's go to the 786 area code. Welcome to the show. State your name and where you're from.
My name is Johnny from Dallas, Texas.
Oh, we got Johnny from Dallas. What's going on?
No, I mean, I thought it was a great pay-per-view. I mean, a lot of people don't seem like they were too happy, but I thought it was an awesome pay-per-view. I'd pay for it again if I had to. I mean, it was a great pay-per-view all around, except, I mean, the only problem I saw out here was the Divas match. I mean, that was just time to go to the bathroom and grab a beer or something. I mean,
yeah,
the only good
it was a fun match. That was the whole purpose. Yeah, that was the purpose on TV and, you know, for the live audience. It was just a way to get them on, but everybody gets a breather, you know.
I mean, the only good thing I see about the Vince McMahon, I mean, that thing, you know, it pretty sucked. The only thing I saw about that, I see the Hart Dynasty getting a push out of it. Just simple fact that he's gonna try to get back at them for what they did to them because they beat the crap out of him.
Yeah, Greg, do you see a feud going forward with McMahon feuding with the Hart Dynasty? Is that gonna happen, or is it dependent whether Bret Hart sticks around?
It may depend on whether Bret Hart sticks around, but I don't think it necessarily has to. Mr. McMahon can go on SmackDown and insist that Teddy Long punish the Hart Dynasty for crossing him at WrestleMania. So I could see them doing something like that. And Long, of course, because he's still on probation, would adhere to McMahon's demands. I think I'm a little disappointed that the Hart Dynasty didn't get involved in this feud beforehand, and it took till tonight for them to get involved. I think a lot of it does depend on whether Brett sticks around afterward. But then again, you know, like I said, it doesn't necessarily have to, but depending on which direction they go will depend on whether Brett sticks around or not.
It was so awkward because Hart Dynasty had been heels on TV. They'd never even teased the babyface turn. And then all of a sudden they just kind of come out with this sort of contrived storyline, and they're initially leading this heel faction of Harts who have turned on Brett. And then they're all good and kind of, but then they're going, and then they're kind of running away from McMahon when he pulls out a cheap tire iron. It's just like, oh my gosh, my head's hurting. You know, it was just too much in one event, but. John, did you have a follow-up or any other thought on the WrestleMania card?
I mean, I was at the end of the Edge versus Jericho match. I thought it was a great match, too. When after Edge put it down, you know, that post-action attack and all that, I was screaming at TV hoping for Jack Swagger to come out. I thought that's what they were going to do when he started attacking him.
Ooh, that would have been good. You're right. That would have been good. I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
I mean, as soon as I saw it happening, I'm thinking, oh, God, they're opening up hope because Jericho's laid out. I mean, at the end there, because they kept putting the camera on Edge, walking up slowly to the thing. I was thinking, yeah, Jack Swagger about to run by him. I mean, that's what I was hoping for. I don't know anybody.
I mean, did that cross your mind, Greg? And what's your reaction to maybe why did it pull the trigger on that?
It didn't actually cross my mind. I don't know why. I guess it certainly would have been a viable option for them to have Swagger do that. But like I said, I think Swagger will. It would be my guess as of right now that he'll try to cash in and lose at some point. I don't think he's at the point right now where he would make a credible champion, especially based on the way he's been booked lately. So, and I think it would hurt him if he was to try and get the victory and cash it in against Jericho at that point. Because Jericho's a heel and he's a heel, so that would be kind of awkward for the fans. Although the fans did seem to favor Jericho at times, so I thought it would have made him look a little weak if he'd have cashed it in and lost there, but I also don't see him cashing it in and winning there either. So I think it was best that they held off, hopefully for something, maybe something better will come along.
Yeah. Johnny, any final thoughts before
another one before I let go, last one, that John Cena versus Batista. I mean, you know, I wanted to punch my TV when I saw Batista win, but how great was that crowd? Everybody hated Cena on that. I mean, that's you could tell everybody there was a diehard wrestling fan just by the fact how much they booed him in that crowd. And it was awesome to see that.
Yeah, Greg, what was your reaction to that match and the crowd reactions and whether was that the right finish to have Cena win the belt and be the only title change on the pay-per-view?
Well, that's tough. Ask it a different way.
Do you think that, I mean, okay, were you surprised by the crowd reaction? I mean, I guess it's not really surprising, but what did you think about the way the crowd reacted to Cena winning the belt and to Batista? Sort of, he didn't quite get a mixed reaction. I mean, he's such a good heel, but he wasn't quite to that. He's so entertaining that we're going to cheer him level yet. But what was your reaction to the crowd reactions and whether it was the right booking decision to put the belt on Cena?
Well, the fans, see, the thing is, you know, most everywhere he gets 50-50. Probably a little more face reaction most places. The thing with WrestleMania is fans travel from all over the world to get to WrestleMania, and those are usually the most hardcore of hardcore fans, which we know is not seen as fan base. So that would explain the majority of the booing, I would think. Him winning, it would seem, especially based on the booking lately, that would make sense. I'm interested to see what Batista has to say tomorrow night, definitely, because his heel character's been so hot lately. I want to see how he reacts to this. But simply based on the booking, I think it would be a big disappointment and a big loss for the Cena fans if Cena didn't win here. And, you know, Cena's character is to the point where there isn't much that could happen as far as wins losses that would damage his character. But I think strictly going by the booking and how it's gone so far in this feud, I don't think he would have come out looking good if he had lost here.
Yeah, they kind of had to have him win. It's just, you know, it's WrestleMania. If you have your top babyface lose, you know, it doesn't exactly look good. And, you know, kind of, I think some fans are kind of tired of it because he wins every year. He won at 21.
I mean, he won it, I think, what was it, 22, 23, 24. I know he won last year. I know he, I mean, he wins at WrestleMania pretty much every year. I can't think of a year where he didn't. I'm sure somebody knows if there was in the last 5 or 6 years. But ever since 21, even going to 20, he opened WrestleMania 20 with a victory. So he just, he's the guy who wins at Mania. He's the guy who they present as their Hulk Hogan, the guy who always wins the big match. You know, when it comes down to the big match on the big stage, you know, wins. That's just the way they book him. And that's where the resentment comes in. But he's more marketable to the large audience if he wins these big matches. So I understand the booking completely. Johnny, we appreciate the call. Thanks for the insight. Let's go back to the phone lines. Let's go to the 111 area code. We're going to try a Skype call. State your name and where you're from. 111, you're on the line. All right. Not there.
It's windy wherever he is, it sounds like.
There's a lot of heavy breathing and there's a wind tunnel. Let's try the show 705 area code. 705, welcome to the show. State your name and where you're from.
Hey, guys, what's up? My name is Matt, and I'm from Ontario, Canada.
Hey, Matt, what's going on?
Hey, what's up? I just have a question about the World Heavyweight Championship match tonight. I have no problems with Jericho winning the match. I was actually cheering for him. But I just was I wanted to get your opinions on whether or not this match diminishes the importance of the Royal Rumble winning. Since Edge won the Royal Rumble. Sorry, I'm a little bit nervous right now. My first time calling in here. I just wondered if this match diminishes the importance of the Royal Rumble winner. And, just basically give me your thoughts on that.
I hadn't even thought about that because they didn't play that hand very strongly on TV. I mean, it was more about the spear. Greg, what was your impression of, you know, does that take away from the Royal Rumble that Edge didn't win?
No, I don't think so. I think it gives more legitimacy to it. I think there was a streak there for a while where the Rumble winner was always winning at WrestleMania, and I think that kind of took away a little more from the Rumble than Edge winning, or than Edge losing here. I don't think it's a big deal. And like you said, James, they didn't play that angle up very, very much that Edge won the Rumble and chose to face Jericho. It was just almost like it was booked as an Edge Jericho match by Teddy Long or something like that. So they didn't play that hand very strongly. And now I got to ask, if the caller is still on the line, our first Canadian caller of the night, I got to ask about Bret Hart, Vince McMahon, and what your opinion was on it, if he's still there.
Yeah, Matt.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Of the match. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm still here. I felt my opinion of that match was I thought that the whole thing with the Hart family was unnecessary. I thought that the match would have been fantastic without them involved in it if it was just Bret and Vince. So I thought that was, that was gratuitous, but it didn't take away from the match. I thought it just wasn't necessary, but it didn't take away from the match. Nonetheless, I was glad that Bret won, but I would have preferred that he won without the help of the Hart family and everything like that.
Yeah, I mean, they try to do the smoke and mirrors and have a lot of different elements in play. Like we've talked about, it was overbooked and a lot of unnecessary stuff to get to the destination, which was Bret Hart, Chuck Schuster, Vince McMahon taps out, everybody goes home happy. You know, they just put a lot of extra stuff in that didn't need to be there. I mean, we all kind of expected some extras. We expected some run-ins and interference or maybe something like that, but they kind of went a different route with that element, and I just think it kind of took away from the overall moment itself. It wasn't as big of a moment as it could have been, I thought. But
Right. I thought it could have been it would have been much more of a WrestleMania moment if it was just Bret and Vince one-on-one without any interference or anything outside of Bret and Vince.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, thank you for taking my call, and if you have nothing more to add to my comments, then I'll just let you go on to the other callers.
All right, we appreciate the call, Matt. Be sure to call back again soon.
Yeah.
And we got about 12 minutes left in the show, so we're going to try to roll through four more calls. And we're going to try the 111 again. He called back. So let's try our Skype call 111. Welcome to the show. Thank you, where you're from. 111, you're on the line. All right, we're having trouble with Skype calls today. Anyway, Greg, do you have a solution for the Skype callers to let them know they're on the air? Should we get, like,
I don't know enough. I don't know enough about Skype to help with anything like that.
We should, like, create a code word. Like, if you're on Skype, we're going to say the word, like, onion, and then you know you're on the line or something. Who knows? But I don't know why I thought of onion. Let's go to the 716 area code. 716, you're on the show. State your name and where you're from.
Hey, guys. Appreciate you taking the call there. My name is Dave, no longer from Albany. I, you know, if you guys listen to the Jim Rome show, I also call in and email his show from time to time, too. Let me make a couple points about this. I'm not as big of a wrestling fan as I used to be. I want to comment on Cena first. You know, I look at, you know, the WWE in the last few years. They've tried to go with more real storylines, obviously kind of comparing this their professional sports, and you know, you look at John Cena as kind of your top dog in the fight, and you know, you saw what happened to Tiger Woods, but you look at other sports and you see how the top guy in most sports is, they try and portray that guy as a really clean cut, you know, image conscious guy, and I think that's exactly what Cena is, and he's perfect for the brand, you know, with the PG rating, and you look at how the story was built up so well going into the pay-per-view, with Batista acting like the cocky jerk every week on Raw, coming out there, you know, kind of, you know, having his deal with Vince McMahon at the pay-per-view before WrestleMania and winning the title kind of in a cheap way. And, you know, you could even see, you know, and there's always going to be haters for Cena. I mean, that's just with anything in life nowadays, because that's just how, you know, we live in a society with internet and, you know, TV and, you know, so many different ways to communicate out there. There's always going to be haters and guys who like different styles and anything, but I thought Cena, you know, I thought that was great tonight. And I got one question about the Randy Orton match, and where do you think that goes with Orton? I mean, you think he can really work as a babyface, and you know, what kind of feud do you see him going in? Do you see him going into a feud maybe with Sheamus or Batista? Because I think Orton is, you know, it's going to be real interesting to see what he's got going down the road here, and I want to appreciate you guys taking my call, and I'll talk to you later.
Dave, we appreciate the call. Greg, Legacy, Randy Orton, where is this going with Orton going over clean with a big baby face reaction and sort of a big support behind him? Where is this thing going?
Well, you know, Dave asked the question of where Orton goes from here, but I think I'm more interested to see where Rose and DiBiase go from here.
Yeah.
There's no longer any legacy. Their tag team is pretty much broken up thanks to their infighting in the match. So I'm kind of interested to see where they go as singles at this point. I think Orton can manage as a kind of a tweener babyface and heel there. I don't know if they're ever – well, not ever, but in the near future, I don't know if they would turn him full babyface. But it is interesting because that feud does seem like it was one of the ones that was ended at WrestleMania. And I really don't know where they go with Cena or DiBiase or Rose from here. So that'll be something to look forward to in the next few weeks as things start to play out, because I'm sure, you know, Orton's too big a name to be left off Extreme Rules. That means they'll have to set up a program in the next few weeks quickly, unless they somehow do a rematch involving him, Rhodes, and DiBiase. And speaking of Rhodes, what were those tights he was wearing tonight? Holy cow, they were almost flesh-colored. That was frightening.
I like the white boots. I got a kick out of the white boots. I thought it was a good look for him. But the thing about Cody is he took the punt. You know, are they gonna have him off TV for 3 months and sell the brain damage and the effects, or is he going to be on TV tomorrow, you know? And then with DiBiase and Rhodes and Orton, where they go from here, you know, I don't know. And then, you know, I assume we're going to get Cena Batista in a rematch. If it's not on Raw tomorrow night, I imagine it's going to be the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. And maybe they have a number one contender match, the Extreme Rules, maybe a four or six-man, some sort of gimmick match. I don't know, you know, throw out a gimmick match with four, five, six guys in it. Nav Orton, Hunter, Sheamus, maybe Kofi, you know, put a couple other young guys in there, maybe throw Evan Bourne out there, who knows. But that's a possibility to have Orton just, before they figure out what they're going to do with him, put him in a normal contender match, maybe the next pay-per-view, and then decide from there. So, I don't know. Right? And that's, you know, Legacy is it's been a very muddy issue for so long, that, you know, the guy next door or the guy down the street has as good of a guess as we do on where that thing's going. So, Let's go to 785 area code. 785, welcome to the show. State your name and where you're from.
My name's Scott. From Kansas. How's it going?
Good, Scott. How are you doing?
I don't know. I mean, overall, I would say that this was...
You don't know how you're doing, Scott?
I don't know, actually. I've had a lot of gin tonight.
That's rough, man. But, that is rough.
What's talking about, Scott? What's on your mind?
No, I mean, I felt like, overall, it was a disappointment, right? The card was good, but up until Bret Hart and Vince McMahon, it was all right. It was good. It was living up to expectations, but that thing just drained it, man, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It was terrible, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, I was watching that, and you know, I have emotions invested in matches, and I watch things, and a good match, I get pumped up, and I want to talk to people about it, and that thing just, I want to just turn the channel, you know, on a $55 pay-per-view. I want to turn the channel. Do you not agree?
I think the problem with that was, and we kind of touched a bit about it on here tonight, but the problem was that they gave away, you know, what should have unfolded over the 10-minute match within the first 3 minutes. And
the
Hart family turning on Vince. And they'd have drawn that out a little bit during the match and set a point where the drama and the tension kind of unfolds, and then you get the moment where one of the Hart family or Bruce or whoever is, you know, turns on Vince or does something subtly to turn on Vince. Then I think you get the crowd to go, oh, wait a minute, and this is where Bret, you know, this is where Bret takes over. But that was revealed before even the match started, and there was nothing else for really the crowd to look for other than Vince taking his beating, which he did. But
there wasn't
any drama in it.
I have a 6-year-old daughter that's more coordinated, and I know Bret Hart's been through a lot, man. Seriously, he can't perform. He should have known that. He should have realized that. His whole family's getting paid off on this, right? So why not let the Hart dynasty just take over and control the whole thing? And he just stepped aside because it just looked terrible.
Scott, who did you say was less coordinated than your daughter? Vince or Hart?
Bret Hart. He falls down all the time. I mean, am I wrong? I know he had a stroke, and I know he wants a payday, and that's great, but he should have known his limitations, right? And let the Hart Dynasty step in a little bit more.
Yeah, and they had some moments with Hart Dynasty. I mean, they did the heart attack on the outside. It was kind of, they didn't really know how to set it up, and there was a miscommunication with Smith and Kidd. But I think the big moments were Hart doing the chair shots. And doing the sharpshooter and doing the kicks to the groin.
They ruined the sharpshooter, didn't they? They ruined it by teasing it. And if you tease something, you got to come back with something better. And every time they teased it, it was worse than the tease, you know?
Yeah, it was a lot of
weak shots with a tire iron.
And then
do you guys think that maybe the John Cena haters were plants? Because they were wearing pink shirts the next match after that.
Yeah, because they're wearing what, We Hate Cena, or I don't remember. He went in the studio.
Yeah, but after that match, they were wearing some crazy, I couldn't tell what the shirt said, but it was some pink shirts they were wearing for the Taker match.
I would not surprise me in the least, but maybe
I think they were playing
a French freak match. I don't know.
Do you really think Cena would go to unknown haters? And I don't know. It was a good moment when I saw it, when Cena had a big smile with haters behind him. But after that, it seemed like plants when they were wearing pink shirts for the main event. I don't know.
You could be right. You could be, yeah. Scott, any final thoughts before we let you go tonight?
What's that?
Any final thoughts before we let you go? Got one more call I wanted to get to tonight.
I got you. I don't know. I was hoping more from Edge and Jericho, especially after the terrible thing with Bret Hart. I thought Edge and Jericho, they could main event any pay-per-view. They did a good job. They weren't getting enough time, as most of the matches tonight were. But, you know, I think it was disappointing overall. I just think it's hard for people to say after $55. I think it was a disappointing WrestleMania. But
yeah. No, I think a lot of people are going to say that. So it's one of those things where how much weight did you put on certain matches, and some came in under expectations, you're going to be disappointed. So we appreciate the call, Scott. Be sure to call back during the week, and we'll get more of your thoughts.
No matter what kind of wrestling fan you are, Ring Rust Radio is the perfect podcast for you. Every Wednesday night, Ring Rust Radio breaks down the hottest news in professional wrestling, including Raw, SmackDown, and WWE pay-per-view reviews. That isn't all, as Ring Rust Radio also delves into NXT, Lucha Underground, Ring of Honor, Impact Wrestling, and New Japan to discuss the latest happenings in every major company. Ring Rust Radio conducts interviews with the biggest stars in the wrestling business as well, including Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Roman Reigns, AJ Styles, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, and many more. If you're looking for your wrestling fix with an entertaining twist, check out Ring Rust Radio every week on Blog Talk Radio, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go to our final caller of the day. This is going to be from the 812 area code. 812, welcome to the show. State your name and where you're from.
Hi, guys. This is David from Terre Haute. How are you?
Good, David. How you doing? We got about 30 seconds, so give us your quick thoughts on WrestleMania.
I'll make it real quick. Everyone's talking about the Bret Hart McMahon match. I really thought that, you know, now they're going the PG route. I really thought this match could have benefited from the use of blood to add to the dramatic effect of the match and to keep the fans on the edge of their seats. What are your thoughts on that?
All right, yeah, we'll discuss that. David and Greg and I are going to be around for a VIP after show. Torch VIP members can get that. We'll answer that question. Right after this, for Greg Parks, this is James Caldwell, signing off. All right, Greg, we're going to stick with David on the line here in the VIP after show portion of the show, and then we'll end the blog talk. Greg, what were your thoughts on, I mean, could blood have been used? I mean, obviously WWE has gotten away from that element, but would that have enhanced the Bret Hart Vince McMahon match?
It might have. If you're not doing chair shot to the head, there wasn't a lot that blood could have come from. I guess the crowbar, you could have used that to the head or something like that. But, you know, I think it would have enhanced it a bit, but I think in the end people would still be talking about how the match dragged and how pretty much worthless it was. So I don't know. The blood would not have saved the match, let's just say that.
Yeah, I think the booking was at a level that I don't think there was much that could have been, other than have the first time Hart teased a sharpshooter be the finish. You know, like one of the callers said, it was sort of a thing where he teased it, everybody was ready for it, okay, let's save the match, and then he kind of did some more stuff, and then he teased it again, and then he did some more stuff, and then he teased it again, and then he finally hit it, and it was a letdown, I thought, in that respect. So I agree with the caller who said, you know, why did he keep teasing it if he wasn't going to have something more in to follow up with, so. Greg, we'll go ahead and end the Blog Talk Radio portion of the show now, and we'll be back momentarily with the VIP after show, and that will happen right now.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.
All right, Greg, we are now in the VIP after show portion of our post-WrestleMania show. We'll keep it short because we cover pretty much everything. We had a lot of different calls on a lot of different matches. Everything kind of stood out to different callers. So, Greg, what was just your overall impression of the pay-per-view? If you were to give your roundtable score, what would it be, and what's one thing that we're going to see on Raw tomorrow night? Are we going to see like a Ric Flair type night after WrestleMania where they focus on Shawn Michaels' career? Does Michaels disappear? And kind of like last year where he lost Undertaker and we didn't see him for 6 months, you know, not even a live appearance the next night on Raw. What's your overall review of the pay-per-view and what do you see happening on Raw tomorrow night?
Well, I'm going to pull a vintage Greg Parks and say I haven't decided on my score yet, 1 to 10. I will say it was a thumbs-up show. It didn't live up to the hype that everyone was predicting and even I was expecting, but that doesn't make it a bad show. Just means it didn't live up to, you know, the high expectations that people had, which is, you know, often that happens. So, you know, but as for Michaels, you know, I would expect to see something tomorrow on him. You know, I don't know if it'll be a full-fledged retirement thing. You know, and this is one of the problems with the guest hosts. I'm, you know, half expecting them to try and go the serious route. But then again, I mean, what's the promo going to say? Is it going to say, like, the test of Hot Tub Time Machine, which is Shawn Michaels' farewell tonight on Raw, as they give him the farewell of, you know, whatever, you know, they'll be trying to be serious about it, like Shawn Michaels retiring, but they have to, you know, acknowledge that the Hot Tub Time Machine cast is the one who put it together. And I mean, like, come on, really? But, yeah, I would expect to see him in some capacity tomorrow, because he's there. you know, they're not going to – I doubt they wouldn't use him if he was already, you know, there. So – but what happens, I'm not sure. You know, like I said, I could see him going off TV for 6 months or whatever and have him come back in the fall sometime like that. I could see him staying off for a while, but I don't think he'll be done forever.
I'm gonna do a Vintage Parks too and say I'm gonna wait and see.
Okay. Make me feel a little better then about that.
Well, one thing that I could see them incorporate a Hot Tub Time Machine, and I actually researched this, is that in that movie, the hot tub goes back to, I believe, 1986-ish. It was either 85 or 86. And then the graphic, if we remember, Shawn Michaels' graphic, when The Undertaker sort of, you know, career, Shawn Michaels' career, 1985 or 1986 or 2010, whichever one. One of them, either the hot tub or the or Michaels' career was 85 or 86. So perhaps there's a tie-in there where they go back through his career, dating back to when the Hot Tub Time Machine was. So that's one potential tie-in, and yes, I did research that, for when that Hot Tub Time Machine
was.
Well,
you would have to then trust that the WWE writers would know that, and since they've been doing probably nothing but eating, sleeping, and breathing WrestleMania for the last, you know, month or so, I don't know that that would even cross their mind to research or go see the movie, which, by the way, I've read the reviews for Hot Tub Time Machine, and I am surprised at how good the reviews it's getting. I mean, that looked just like one of those classically awful, you know, mid-spring comedies, and it's, I think it's like 60% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. Ebert gave it 3.5 stars. I mean, it's just amazing.
Wow. Wow. Huh. Well, actually got a well-received movie to be guest host. I guess it's a good get for WWE. Maybe they'll have some more buzz than your standard post WrestleMania. I don't know how much bonus buzz, but you know, I'm sure it doesn't. At least it wasn't like the worst reviewed movie ever, and no one wants to see anything associated with the movie. So
well, ironically, that's also out now because I did see that the Jennifer Aniston movie, what's it called? The Bounty Hunter is 9% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, which is just awful. That's almost impossible. Yeah.
Wow. Well, at least I didn't get Gerard Butler. That's good.
True.
He does look like Batista, though. So maybe that would have been a good. Anyways, way off track. WrestleMania Raw tomorrow night. I imagine they'll do some sort of video package on Michaels, whether he's there or not. Who knows? He might go home after his pizza and a movie with his family after WrestleMania. I imagine Batista, Cena will be a focal point. I imagine Triple H will be. I imagine Jack Swagger subplot. You know, we'll see. I mean, the night after WrestleMania is always very interesting. And I've kind of played in my head who's going to start it off. And I think John Cena starts it off with a promo. I imagine Batista interrupts. They set the rematch at Extreme Rules. That's how I anticipate the show opening. They could open with Shawn Michaels and focus the whole show on him. It's kind of that, you know, it's that Raw where nobody wants to be there, really. But they kind of have to because they've got to recap what happened and go to the next pay-per-view. So,
well, the interesting thing to me is going to be how Triple H reacts to Michaels being retired. I mean, does he challenge The Undertaker for a match tomorrow night or what? Because, you know, obviously he and Michaels are partners going way back, so I'm almost less interested to see what Triple H has to say about his match with Sheamus and how they capitalize on that, more so how he reacts to Shawn Michaels being quote-unquote retired now.
That's very interesting. Maybe they do Taker Hunter at Extreme Rules. I mean, they've got to have a hook for that pay-per-view. That pay-per-view just is not going to do buys because people are paying $60 for WrestleMania, and then they, you know, WWE wants them to turn around and pay $45 for another pay-per-view. I mean, does anybody really want to do that? No. They've got to have a big match, and Hunter and Undertaker is that sort of big match they could put out there that wouldn't be, you know, kind of blowing a future WrestleMania match. So, and kind of carrying the momentum of Shawn Michaels Undertaker, I think that might be the way to go for Extreme Rules to have that big headline match. So you could be on to something, Greg.
You also have the trouble, though, of Taker being on SmackDown and Triple H being on Raw.
Yeah. And I know that they're kind of lax with the rules until the draft, through WrestleMania, though. Also have the issue that Taker is very banged up, and he can't have gotten better after tonight's match. And, you know he's going to take some time off after this, but when does he get that time off? So those are all questions I think that probably should be answered or at least addressed somehow before that match is made. I could see that being a Raw match. I could see a couple rematches heading into Extreme Rules. I mean, the hook there is the stipulation, certainly. And I'm sure that's why it was moved to the Backlash spot, is because they feel that, you know, the post-WrestleMania show doesn't get a great buy rate every year, and a lot of that has to do with the price of WrestleMania and how many people buy it. And, you know, but I think they think the Extreme Rules moniker and the stipulations will entice people to plunk down more money because it's not something they see, you know, much anymore as far as the extreme nature of the matches. So it may feel different enough now, they think, to get people to put down the money.
Yeah, and they're going to have to do it organically, too. I mean, we've seen them try to shove stipulations out there with limited success. You know, they've had some more gimmick pay-per-views recently that worked because there are actual reasons for these matches to take place in most of the cases, like TLC, the TLC pay-per-view. They've got to find an organic reason to build toward matches with stipulations. That's why we're going to get a lot of rematches from Mania. Ray, I think Ray and Punk has got some more legs in it. Undertaker, Undertaker Hunter, perhaps, standing off of Undertaker HBK, perhaps Jericho and Edge, on and on. So there's a lot of, I mean, Cena Batista, I think we're almost guaranteed a rematch with Batista dropping the title tonight. So I don't know. They're going to find a way to organically build to that, and we'll see on Monday night. So. Greg, any final thoughts before we wrap up a very busy Sunday and a very exciting week of wrestling and wrestling coverage? And just if you want to maybe try to put this in perspective on what this WrestleMania meant and just your overall impression digesting it about an hour, hour and a half after the pay-per-view ended.
Yeah, this is the busy time of year for wrestling fans and for people like us who cover things, and it's very, very hectic, and, you know, it's not quite the relief that I'm sure a lot of the wrestlers feel after WrestleMania because they've been building up to it for 3 months or whatever, but it's certainly time for reflection looking back because WrestleMania is such a big deal. It's almost like the Super Bowl in so many ways, and one of the ways is the Super Bowl. After the Super Bowl, you kind of look back on the whole NFL season as a whole, the regular season, the playoffs, the Super Bowl, and you kind of formulate discussions and opinions around that, and that's kind of what you do at WrestleMania. You look back at the Rumble. You look back at the Elimination Chamber. How were things built toward WrestleMania? Did it succeed in the end at WrestleMania? And what's next? And you have a lot of quicker turnaround here than you do in the NFL, where you can take a month or two to breathe before free agency starts, before, you know, the draft hype starts up. But, you know, it's back to the grind tomorrow night, and, you know, they start building toward Extreme Rules.
Yeah, it's a never-ending cycle, and, you know, in some respects you want to have a chance to pause, but it's kind of funny because my wife was watching the pay-per-view with me, and she was really into the show, and, you know, she enjoyed it. But then, you know, halfway through the thing, she felt the excitement, the rush, and how much was on the line. And, you know, she was with me at WrestleMania 25 last year, but she turned to me during the pay-per-view, and she said, do they get, like, a break after this? I mean, it's just, like, there's so much hype and energy, and I just laughed. I said, no, they've got Raw tomorrow night. They've got an April European tour. They've got SmackDown on Tuesday and taping for Friday. It's just, it doesn't end. And so part of it's exciting. Part of it is you'd like to just sit there and just kind of digest what we learned and what we found out about wrestling and where it is today and, you know, what works and what doesn't work with an audience and kind of be able to evaluate that. But it's right back to, we've got Raw, we're going to build another pay-per-view. So it's just one of those unique things about the wrestling business is you don't, for better or for worse, you don't have a chance to really digest everything. And so maybe you get into the spring and you kind of get that lull season. So at that point, we're complaining about how bad the booking is. So I think we all just take a breath tonight and see what happens on Monday. And that's kind of where we are. Yeah. Any final thoughts, Greg, or does that about do it?
I'm tired.
I got a couple more write ups to do before I go to bed.
Are we gonna get your hang?
I'm about to write that up as soon as I'm done with you here, and send my roundtable score in to Wade for the newsletter. And I still have a column to write this week, so I'll either get to that tonight or tomorrow. So I'm burning the midnight oil almost literally here in New York. So it's exciting, but it's tiring.
Yes. Yeah. I'm looking forward to getting some sleep at some point next week. I think I read every single possible interview anybody did that was out there this week, and my head is—it's just like I've seen the same quotes over and over. But let's try and find something different here, you know?
Yeah, and it's funny for you. It must be, you know, when you see these guys in the matches at WrestleMania, is it to the point where like you can't just sit back and enjoy it for what it is because you have WrestleMania time? Everybody's doing newspaper interviews, and you must be thinking, oh, Kofi Kingston in this match. He said this a few weeks ago in the, you know, the Palookaville Star or something like that. I mean, can you block that stuff out of your head to enjoy the matches for what they are?
I kind of made a mental checkout on everything I'd read on Sunday around 3 a.m. when I put together the list of all the interviews and big news items out there, and just kind of made a summary and just kind of said, okay, I'm checking out of that for just to enjoy WrestleMania Sunday and be able to cover it with a fresh set of eyes. And then we get on the podcast, the pre-show, and we're talking about the Shawn Michaels Undertaker match and potential smoke screens, and all those interviews just come flooding back as I'm thinking back to all the quotes Michaels had said and every single interview that I covered. I'm like, oh, they're all coming back. And then, you know, so am I going to be sitting there during the matches and thinking about everything he tried to throw out there? And I pushed it out of my mind during the pay-per-view and just focused on what was happening, because there was just too much happening on that pay-per-view to be thinking about all the stuff that had been out there in the interviews. So I tried as much as I could to separate the hype from what was happening, but some of those interviews did creep back in my mind during the Shawn Michaels match. It was just inevitable because of how many I had listened to or read during the week. But it's fun. I mean, it's a fun time. We get a lot of traffic, a lot of interest. We get newspapers wanting to get interviews with us for the Torch, and that's always fun to get our name out there. You know, newspapers wanting some insight on what's this WrestleMania thing all about coming to. So,
me say, how much time have you got?
Yeah, it's funny because I was on the phone with one of the reporters in the Arizona Republic, and I think I talked for about half an hour about just WrestleMania and just kind of giving her some background and everything going on. I think I even said to her, how much time you got, you know? So, yeah, it's fun. It's a fun week.
Well, that's all good. Right. I'm glad you could enjoy it then.
Yeah, it was good to enjoy and analyze and break it down and just be part of a big event and just try to keep an objective mind and report and analyze what's out there. And we will pick it up again all over again on Monday and see what happens on Raw. And Impact on Monday night, as if we need another show to cover.
Oh, sweet.
I think I got the lead in, and Wade had Impact last week, so I get a taped Impact above the Love Sponge to cover on Monday night. So, awesome.
That'll kind of cleanse your palate from WWE then, from the 4 hours tonight.
Yeah. I guess it has a trade-off. So. All right, girl, we can talk forever, so we'll go ahead and wrap up the VIP. And we'll call it a night, get some rest, get some stuff written, and see what Monday beholds. So for Torch columnist Greg Parks, it's a pleasure as always, and we'll have a live chat on Wednesday looking at what is going to happen going forward. For Greg Parks, this is Torch assistant editor James Caldwell signing off.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. Love.